sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Maestro James Conlon, conductor and creator of the Recovered Voices program that revives, plays, and records the work of Jewish composers martyred by the Nazis, and the winner of the 2013 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I must say that the life of a congregational rabbi is never dull. Last weekend, from about the time Two Jewish aired until the following afternoon, we went through a 30-hour period in which we learned of six deaths or impending deaths of family members of our congregants. There was a whole lot of loss in a short period of time, of course, and while it was not the most I've experienced in a week during my time as a rabbi, it might be the most in the shortest time. The truth is that the life cycle events that take place in a synagogue are like a concentrated version of life itself, a microcosm of the entirety of the human journey played out in unexpected sequences. Some weeks there are three or four babies born. Some weeks as a congregational rabbi you officiate at multiple weddings. Some weeks you visit multiple people who are experiencing life-threatening medical emergencies. And sometimes, in less than 2 days, it's six deaths. It's the nature of serving a congregation, of course, and other clergy of other denominations have the same kinds of experiences. I'm reminded of the time the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral came out. My dad, who was a rabbi and a cantor, said that wasn't the name of a Hollywood film at all. It was a description of his last weekend. And in a way, he's right. 2 weeks ago today, I went from doing an invocation and leading services to teaching two classes and conducting a choir rehearsal, conducting a funeral, officiating at a double baby naming, and finally attending a long fundraising event for our community day school. Last Sunday, it was teaching and conducting, followed by appearing on a panel at a forum on the American Jewish Community in the Pew Report, then attending a benefit screening of a film about empowering girls called Girl Rising, part of a bat mitzvah student's mitzvah project. Think of that. And then dealing with multiple hospital and hospice visits and bereaved families. It's all part of the challenge and purpose of this calling, serving families at hours of greatest need and greatest joy, through both simchas and sorrows, endeavoring to be caring and empathetic and professional all at the same time. I can't think of any other profession quite like that of being a congregational rabbi. And for all the stress and sorrows and politics of it, there's also nothing quite so fulfilling. On a different subject, and to play us in this morning, here's an unusual new cut. It's from a first-time recording artist, 32-year-old cantor Meir Goldberg, an Israeli-born chazan in Miami who recorded the classic schmaltzy tune My Yiddish Imama with an overlaid hip-hop tribute to the Jewish mother from the group Brooklyn Mentality. Not entirely sure that it all works, but Goldberg can really sing, and it certainly qualifies as an update on the 1928 classic Yiddish-English tune, famously recorded by everybody from cantor Yosela Rosenblatt to the Barry Sisters to Eddie Fisher to Neil Sedaka. The last, a past guest of Two Jewish, by the way. Anyway, here it is, My Yiddish Imama by Meir Goldberg and Brooklyn Mentality.
I know that I owe what I am today to that dear little lady who's gone away, to that wonderful Yiddish mama.
Yeah, yo, give it up for the man himself, Meir Goldberg. Yeah, check it.
A Yiddish mama, es gibt nicht besser auf der Welt. A Yiddish mama, oi, baby, bittere, wenn sie fällt. Wie schön in lichtig is in a Haus, wenn die Mama ist so. Wie treuer in finster wird, wenn Gott nimmt ihr auf euer Lomabo. In Wasser ist wahrer Wind. Nicht halten ihre Taien, das ist gewiss die größte Sinn. Oh, wie glücklich und reich ist der Mensch, was Gott als erscheine Masone geschenkt von Gott, nur ein altitschke jüdische Mama. Mama, 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 Mama.
Yeah, and the revolution begins. It's BL, yo, check it. I was a good kid in school, that's how it started off. Until I thought I was cool, so my behavior departed off. Detention and suspension happened too often. Even when the alarm clock was on, my attention snoozed. Teachers took caution and waited on my mom. She was always in the principal's office. Me becoming good seemed like an impossible process. I was a prom, this was comical for me, but she was awfully nauseous. Off the roller coaster, I took her on, she wanted to get off it. I caused mayhem, but she stayed on. I dropped out, but she told me this is the last chance you got now to make something out of yourself. 16 years of age, I went to Wilson, everything changed.
My Yiddish and mommy, I need her more than ever now. My Yiddish and mommy, I'd like to kiss her wrinkled brow. I'd love to hold her hand once more as in a day's nearby, and ask her to forgive me for things I did. Fashion styles, her jewels and her treasures, she found them in her baby smiles. Oh, I know that I owe what I am today to that dear little lady who's gone away, to that wonderful Yiddish mama. Mama, mama, mama.
Religious is something I never saw myself doing. Always felt different. Religion wasn't even on my to-do list. My mom was disappointed. Been out of it since a little boy, and I just didn't feel the spark. Been in the rap music thinking it was the realest art. Changing my attitude, but I can't show you how deep my feelings of gratitude are. That you did more than stand by me. You carried me. The faith that you had in having me. I just wanna start making you happy. See,
that dear little lady who's gone away, to that wonderful Yiddish mama, mama, mama.
That was My Yiddish Mama, Cantor Meir Goldberg and the group Brooklyn Mentality. Goldberg grew up in Tel Aviv as the son of a cantor in the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces. They have cantors in the Israeli military, by the way. And he was surrounded by Jewish musical greats like cantors Moshe Stern and David Bagley, both of whom I had the privilege of hearing in person a few times. You can hear some of that in his extraordinary voice. I'm not sure the hip-hop part of that arrangement works, but it's a noble effort to bring a schmaltzy classic to a younger audience. Today marks the 75th anniversary of Kristallnacht, which took place November 10th, 1938. It's usually considered the true beginning of the Shoah, the Holocaust. That night of broken glass ushered in the destruction of European Jewry, perhaps the most highly educated and cultured Jewish world that had ever existed until then. Well, our guest this morning, Maestro James Conlon, the 2012 Cohan Memorial Foundation Award winner, has created and runs a classical music project, Recovered Voices, that revives and performs and records the music of Jewish composers murdered by the Nazis. In his work, he has reversed some of the damage done by Kristallnacht, and we will meet James Conlon when we return here on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics. And they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. He's Maestro James Conlon. He is the winner of the 2012 Cohan Memorial Foundation Award for his work on recovered voices, bringing back the music of composers murdered by the Nazis, performing it, bringing it to an audience, really literally recovering voices. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you, Rabbi.
Tell me, how did you begin this project? How did you become interested in this?
Very naturally. It started over 20 years ago when I was living and working in Germany. I was the music director of the city of Cologne. I, by chance, on the radio, heard a piece by a composer who was to become one of my favorites, Alexander Zemlinsky. I had only heard the music of Alexander Zemlinsky by chance in my car late at night. This was to become the beginning of this very long journey. I then determined to perform his music. I got a chance to record a great deal of it, over 10 CDs worth of that. By reading about Zemlinsky, I started to read about other names, Franz Schreker, for instance. And from that, it led on to hearing the name of Erwin Schulhoff. And then I read about the Terezin composers. I became aware of the fact that there was an enormous body of music that simply wasn't being played because nobody knew it. Most of us, even I, a musician, practicing musician, had already gotten to the age of 40 without really ever having heard much of it. This began to grow on me in an obsessive way that I said something really needs to be done about this. Now, it was fortunate that I was living in Germany at the time because there are actually, more than any other country, there are more German musicologists and musicians who are concerned about that also. So I learned a lot while I was there. When I returned to the States more or less permanently after my years in Paris, I wanted to put this on the radar of musicians in the United States. So it grew out naturally. It all started very simply. I love this particular piece, and what has become for me is a mission to restore to the repertory music that belongs there, written that came out of the great tradition of classical music, and very, very specifically, for the most part, the great German tradition. And so I work in every way I can to bring that about.
Fascinating story and really rich music, beautiful work. We will talk much more with Maestro James Conlon, the 2012 Cohan Memorial Foundation Award winner, when we return on Two Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Two Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Cohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the in-and-out, as well as vapor as compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
how can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Our guests last week were Neshama Karlbach and Josh Nelson, who are now collaborating on producing music together. This next piece is an unreleased cut from the two of them for the Broadway show Soul Doctor. It's about Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach of blessed memory. Neshama and Josh described it for me when we spoke a couple weeks ago. Here's their description and the song, a classic Karlbach tune called The Whole World is Waiting for Shabbos.
This one song, the song of Shabbos, was really, really special for me because my father wrote that for his father at my grandfather's funeral. He said, he didn't leave us diamonds, he didn't leave us jewels, he left us Shabbos. And I've always wanted to sing it for my father, and I somehow never had the courage because it's so meaningful. On this particular version, my six-year-old son, Raphael, is playing percussion on it, and you'll hear it kind of in the drum break. That's my six-year-old son, who's this amazing prodigy, amazing human being, and an artist already at his age. So I feel like all the generations kind of connect to each other in this one song, and I'm really, really inspired and excited to share it with the world.
Well, you get a chance to share with our listeners right now. Here it goes.
Mizmor, mizmor, shir, shir le'olah Shabbat, mizmor, mizmor.
That was Neshama Karlbach with Josh Nelson singing The Whole World is Waiting, just for you on Too Jewish. We welcome our Mivi Na on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Israel is a very innovative country. Many people may know the book Startup Nation, but that innovation's been going on for a while. Can you tell us a little bit about what Israeli innovation is all about?
Yeah. I guess some of the people that listening right now think of Israel and its innovation in terms of high tech. But actually, even in our kitchen, the soda stream, the soda maker.
That's right.
Yeah, the cherry tomatoes that live longer on the shelf right now because of the Israel innovation. And all kind of things that the flash driver and all kind of things that we are using actually on a daily basis were innovated in Israel. And it's not a trend for just the last few years. It's actually from the beginning of the nation.
So, you know, also in medical technology, of course, some of the special bandages for burns, many of the things that are used in hospitals all over the world, including the United States, come from Israel.
Yeah.
Tell us, why is Israel so innovative and why has it been so from its very beginning?
Yeah, actually, I didn't invent this. It's Startup Nation 2 author that mentioned the fact that Israel is surrounded by, not so friendly countries, so it needs to depend on, you know, itself. So actually, the Israelis are really running and innovating every day just in order to be on the top of the line in terms of, as you said, like high tech and biotech and even agriculture, how do you call the netafim?
The drip water system, drip irrigation.
Yeah, it's the...
Which is used all over the
Sonoran
Desert,
world
where
right
we are now.
Yeah, right. All over the world. It's number one.
So in this innovative spirit, it sort of was compelled. Israel had to develop new things. Now it's almost, the whole culture seems to be dedicated to it with a sort of explosive growth.
Yeah, it's an Israeli culture, but it has a Jewish gene, you know, to innovate and to be, to have the best solution for everything.
I think the other, there's a great story about, someone tells that the world is going to end in 2 weeks, we're going to have a gigantic flood, and the Pope says, okay, start to pray, and the head of the Protestants says, you know, hope for the second coming, and the Jews say, okay, we have 2 weeks to learn how to live underwater.
And we'll have an app for this.
Absolutely. And it'll be an app developed in Tel Aviv area, for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week. When we come back here on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You are just back from Morocco, a fascinating Jewish place. Tell us some of your new insights about Morocco.
Right. Well, you know, it's very interesting. This is like the 10th time I've been to Morocco in round figures, and the second time I did the same trip for the University of Arizona Alumni Association. But of course, as we've all heard, you can't go home again, and the trip is never really the same. There are modifications in the trip. The country changes. The scene changes. The Moroccans have a new king who's very dynamic, very much in touch with the people, married a commoner, a middle-class woman from Fez, who's a computer technician. She's also very open. They're both much more in contact with people than his predecessors were. But one thing, one tradition he keeps up is always having a close cabinet advisor who's Jewish.
Right.
And maintaining very close links with the, you know, shrunken but still important Jewish community of Morocco. And I think your listeners might find it interesting to know that I learned that there were more places in Morocco where there are still active, however small, Jewish communities than I had previously thought. Casablanca has a big one. Casablanca is also home to the only Jewish museum in the whole Arab world. And Casablanca is teeming with Israelis at any time of the year. There are individuals, there are business people, there are tourists, there are tour groups, there are Israelis of Moroccan origin who go home. And because Casablanca has the largest international airport and the best international air service in Morocco, it's just an easy gateway. But apart from Casablanca, I knew that Marrakesh has a distinctive and important Jewish history.
Yeah, tremendous. Very interesting place.
I did not know that it still has two functioning synagogues, as well as a kosher restaurant. And you know, the kosher restaurant presumably is kept in business by visitors, not by locals, because I think there's only hundreds of locals, not thousands. But of course, hundreds of Jews is easily enough to warrant two synagogues.
Of course.
Three Jews is
enough
to
warrant two synagogues.
But also Fez, where, you know, Fez is one of the imperial cities. The ancient Jewish quarter was literally in the shadows of the imperial palace. There's a splendid Jewish cemetery there, which is open for visits. And to my great surprise, the synagogue we started to visit, where I was supposed to give my group a lecture on the history of the Jews
in Morocco,
right, was occupied by a Finnish tour group, which was getting essentially the same lecture, but in Finnish. And they showed no signs of being willing to leave. They were going to be there half an hour, clearly. So the caretaker gave our guide a very ancient key. I mean, a key that at least 200 years old, to another synagogue nearby, which was, you know, a 5 or 10 minute walk through a maze of little streets in the ancient Jewish quarter.
The Melech.
And we went to the Melech, right. We went to another synagogue where I had not been before. And that synagogue itself is quite a story, which I will
tell us
next week.
Exactly. Thanks, Tom. But Morocco at one point had probably 500,000 Jews, obviously much smaller population, but a fascinating place.
Right.
We will continue exploring it next week.
Look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. A woman walks into the post office to buy stamps for her Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, "May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please?" "What denomination?" asks the clerk. And the woman says, "Oy vey, my God, it's come to this. Okay. 6 Orthodox, 12 Conservative, and 32 Reform." I know it's an old joke, but I told you that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and enjoy Hanukkah coming up in just a couple weeks now. And now a word of Torah. Family dynamics play a central role in the whole book of Genesis, from Adam and Eve and their loving sons, Cain and Abel, through the intricacies of Joseph's awful relationships with his brothers. In fact, you can easily claim that the Torah teaches us all about family life by showing us how not to do it. But the most complicated of all the families of Genesis, and we began the book with the first older brother in history murdering his younger sibling, continuing it afterwards through a series of terrible intra-family rivalries. Anyway, the most complex and intricate of all the dysfunctional family groups we encounter is surely that of our great ancestor Jacob, with his four wives and 13 children. In this week's Torah portion of Vayishlach, Jacob is returning to his homeland of Canaan, someday to be known as Israel, when he hears rumors of the approach of his fearsome and feared brother Esau, headed his way, accompanied by 400 armed men. Jacob is in a panic. Seeking to save at least half his family from utter destruction, he divides his household in two, and in the darkness of the night, before his coming encounter with Esau's mini-army, Jacob crosses alone to a small island in the middle of a tributary of the Jordan River. There he encounters a representative of God. Perhaps a man, perhaps an angel, perhaps a spirit from a dream. Perhaps his own conscience. The text is ambiguous about the nature of the second combatant, but one thing is clear. This enemy wrestles with Jacob all night, and when neither can prevail, the two reach a truce as dawn breaks. The conclusion of this encounter includes an important change for Jacob. He's given a new name, Yisrael, Israel, one who wrestles with God. Jacob, now also called Israel, goes on to meet Esau, and surprisingly, the brothers resolve their lifelong differences. It's an important act of forgiveness and reconciliation, a kind of modeling that will matter for Jacob's own children when Joseph and his brothers ultimately reunite a generation later, after similarly disastrous sibling rivalries. Unfortunately, the rest of Jacob's family life remains problematic, filled with conflict and complexity, tzoras and heartbreak. But at least one example is created of a way to emerge from the heartache of family struggle. If we first learn to encounter God, to wrestle with the divine, then we may be able to find our way back to those we love. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Maestro James Conlin, winner of the 2012 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award, will explain what moved him to seek out the work of composers martyred by the Nazis during the Holocaust, and what it's like recovering those lost voices. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli cabinet member and former foreign minister Avigdor Lieberman was acquitted of all corruption charges against him last week by a Jerusalem court. He was welcomed back into the government by Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu immediately. The court decided unanimously to acquit Lieberman, who had been charged with fraud and breach of trust over allegations he gave an Israeli diplomat an ambassador's post in exchange for a tip-off about a police probe into his, Lieberman's, affairs. "This chapter is now behind me. I'm focusing on the challenges that lie ahead," Lieberman told reporters. The three-judge panel said they found that the proven facts do not indicate a conflict of interest as serious as claimed by the prosecutors. Prosecutors were weighing whether to appeal or not. Investigations into Lieberman were first opened back in 2001 and spanned nine countries. Last year, Israel's attorney general decided not to charge Lieberman on a larger corruption case, which included allegations of money laundering and bribery. Known for his fiery remarks, he has likened Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan, a vocal critic of Israel, to a Nazi propaganda minister like Joseph Goebbels, and he has called for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to be removed. Lieberman is the latest in a string of Israeli politicians who have faced corruption charges in the past few years. Former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert actually resigned as Prime Minister in 2008, 5 years ago when he was indicted. He has since been acquitted of most of the charges against him. Lieberman, head of the right-wing Yisrael Beitenu party, based primarily on immigrants from the former Soviet Union, may return to the vacant post of foreign minister soon. This cannot be a good thing for the progress of peace talks with the Palestinians. More than 5,000 Chabad rabbis and their supporters gathered last week for the 30th annual Kinus, the Conference of International Shluchim, or Messengers of the Hasidic Movement. Former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman addressed the crowd as their first keynote speaker, that is. Rabbi Dov Greenberg, the Chabad rabbi at Stanford, told the crowd that you are more likely to find an atheist, secular, or humanist Jew at a Chabad house than you are to find an Orthodox Jew. Perhaps true. And among the guests was Rabbi Rick Jacobs, the president of the Union for Reform Judaism, the congregational arm of the Reform Jewish movement here in North America. Chabad, of course, follows Orthodox Judaism's belief that the Torah was given directly by God to Moses at Mount Sinai, and that halacha, Jewish law, applies at all times and places. Reform Judaism, my own movement on the other hand, maintains that Jewish traditions evolve and can be modernized and changed to reflect the surrounding culture. Chabad's invitation to Rick Jacobs reflects the movement's philosophy to embrace everyone, without regard for creed or denominational difference. Jacobs returned the sentiment, saying that it was inspiring to be with a group of Jewish leaders who feel so passionately about bringing the love of Yiddishkeit and the life of commitment to the widest possible circle. Look, if the president of the Reform Movement and Chabad Shluchim can sit at the same table to connect as one Jewish people, who knows? Maybe there's hope for all Jews to sit together, notwithstanding deep differences, even before the arrival of the Messiah. In more good news, the Women of the Wall held a peaceful prayer service under police protection at the Kotel in Jerusalem, the Western Wall, marking the group's 25th anniversary, 25 years. Absent from this service, which drew 800 worshipers, were large crowds of Orthodox girls who, at the behest of their rabbis and activists, had blocked the Women of the Wall's women's section in previous months on Rosh Chodesh. For the first time, Women of the Wall occupied the majority of the section, with a crowd of male supporters stretching back into the giant plaza. This group has met for women's prayer services at the Wall at the beginning of every Jewish month for the past quarter century, but has seen controversy and rapid change in its status for the past year. From last December until April, women in the group who donned talitot, prayer shawls, or sang too loudly would often be detained by police, even kept overnight. But in April of this year, a Jerusalem District Court judge ruled that the group's practices do not violate any of the wall's regulations. Since then, the police are protecting the women rather than arresting them. "We've come a long way, baby," Women of the Wall chairwoman Anat Hoffman, a past guest of Two Jewish, said. "It shouldn't have taken 25 years, it should have taken 2 weeks. But now we're where we should be." That April court ruling sparked a backlash from the Haredi Orthodox community, of course. A new group formed to oppose Women of the Wall, called Women for the Wall. It persuaded leading Haredi rabbis to send the community's girls to the wall en masse to pray silently during the Women of the Wall services and block their access. In May, the Haredi crowd included thousands of men. They packed the plaza in a protest that became violent. Since then, however, the Haredi demonstrations have begun to wane. Several dozen Haredi men came this time to protest, some yelling epithets at teenagers who had come to support the Women of the Wall, some blowing whistles or blowing the shofar, but aside from a few token disturbances, the service was basically uninterrupted. May it continue to be so. And finally, even more good news, the Detroit Tigers, a top baseball team in the American League, lost in the ALCS last year, hired Brad Ausmus, who is Jewish, to be their new manager. Osmus is 44 years old. He managed the Israeli national team's bid for the World Baseball Classic. He is only the sixth Jewish manager in Major League Baseball history. We've had far more owners than that. Osmus is, however, the second Jewish guy managing in the show today. Oakland A's manager Bob Melvin is the reigning manager of the year in the American League and is also, of course, Jewish. Brad Osmus caught for four teams during his playing days. His Israel team didn't quite qualify for the World Baseball Classic back in 2012, but they came close, losing to Spain 9-7 in 10 innings in the final game of the qualifying tournament. Osmus is from Connecticut. He was educated at Dartmouth, but he's never served as a manager or coach in the big leagues. He has been a special assistant to the San Diego Padres since 2010, the year he retired as a player. Osmus played for the Tigers in two stints during his playing days and finished his career with the Dodgers. He spent the bulk of his career with the Houston Astros. With the Tigers, he succeeds Jim Leland, who stepped down following Detroit's loss last month to the eventual world champion Boston Red Sox in the ALCS. Leland managed the Tigers for eight seasons, twice winning the AL pennant. Anyway, Mazel Tov to Brad Osmus on becoming the new manager of the Tigers. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Maestro James Conlon. He's the winner of the 2012 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for his work on recovered voices, bringing back to life, if you will, the music of composers, some of them murdered by the Nazis. I may have misspoken earlier when I talked about which of these composers you're reviving and what their fates were. Can you clarify that for our audience?
My mission is to restore to the repertory any music of any composer who, through the suppression and the cruelty of the Nazi regime, was sidelined. There are as many stories as there are people. Many of those composers had to emigrate. Many of them lost their positions in Europe and had to compensate by doing other things, and they lost the forum for their music. In the worst case scenarios, there were, I would say, five or six who are extraordinary, who died in concentration camps. So it's not so much focused on what was their fate, but what is their music, and why is it so important that it be restored to its proper place?
So let's talk about the music. You know, I had the opportunity to sponsor a concert of Victor Ullmann's music at my own synagogue, another composer who was suppressed by the Nazis. Talk about what the tradition, after all, I think of Jewish composers in the middle of the 20th century as representing some of the best schooled, the best composers, some that came to the States really changed the future of classical music. Arnold Schoenberg comes to mind. Talk a little bit about that environment and that culture.
I'm glad that you mentioned Arnold Schoenberg because, of course, he's a giant. But I don't really think of him in terms of my mission because he doesn't need the help.
Right. I went to music classes at UCLA in Schoenberg Hall. He's around.
He was able to establish himself in a way that is consistent with his genius.
Of course.
But not everybody was so fortunate.
Of course.
And so I'm trying to bring out the music of those who were less fortunate. And I'm glad you mentioned Victor Ullmann because he is an extraordinary individual. He did die in Auschwitz, and he spent 2 years in Terezin. And in Terezin, he was one of the leading lights and inspirations to everyone to maintain their cultural life as much as possible. And in that time, he wrote 20 compositions. That's unbelievable when you think of the conditions that he fought against his environment, and he found his voice by doing just that. In other words, he found that composing, making music, helping others make music became a very important part of survival. That music was missing between 1945 and the early 1970s, which is extraordinary, and found by chance. And that is a very, very good example of what kind of work I think is important and that needs to be done.
You know, it must be extraordinarily difficult to convince supporters, orchestras, anyone doing repertoire to play the music of an unknown composer. How do you do it?
It is difficult because, especially in times of economic difficulties, which we're living through, anything that isn't familiar or popular tends to get pushed to the side for another day. So, yes, it is difficult. I rarely find that the problem is getting people to like this music or to react to it or to be moved by it. The only problem is getting people into the
symphony concert hall, right?
It's unfamiliar. And by the way, that's no different from many, many other things. The important thing is for people to hear it and to begin to develop a relationship to it.
What's the most interesting story that you've uncovered in working with this music?
Well, it would be hard to say the most interesting story. I find one of the most inspiring individuals to be Victor Ullmann.
We spoke about him briefly, right?
As a human being as well as a composer.
When you play this music, you know, your audience can't be Holocaust survivors. Sadly, they're mostly gone now. Who is the most inspired by the music?
Hard to say, and actually, I don't measure that because I want everybody to be inspired. I can tell you, however, that many times in the last 10 years, people have come to me after one of these performances and say, you know, I had an uncle or that somebody who had been in concentration camp. I have even encountered several musicians, by the way, who very young. One who had been in Auschwitz as a boy, another who had been transported from Prague to London on the Kinder transport. So there are still people who have they're older now, of course. but they have some direct contact with this. I met a woman who just passed away just last month in her 90s, who told me that at her home, she met Alexander Zemlinsky and Victor Ullmann in Prague because her father had been the director of the Prague Conservatory, and that they came to lunch.
Oh, simple as that. All classical musicians are professionals. You know, they're supposed to play everything as well as they possibly can with as much feeling as they can muster within the limits of what they're doing. Is there something different about the experience of conducting this music? And is it different, do you think, for the musicians as well?
My goal is that it is no different from anything else, because which is to say, it is great music and should be played with other great music, and it shouldn't be compartmentalized. That being said, of course, when I rehearse these pieces, I explain the background of the circumstances of the composer, because many times people are not familiar with that. And in the case of, I find musicians actually very open to listening and understanding what it's all about. And and not every musician is going to like every piece, and that's fine. That's normal. Not everybody likes Brahms or Bruckner, so fair enough.
Well, almost everybody likes Mozart, but you know.
Almost everybody likes Mozart, and well, they should.
How do you decide which piece to do next?
The same way I decide which Mozart symphony I want to conduct next, or what Verdi opera I want to do next. It's a combination of circumstances and artistic attraction to the piece. Now, sometimes it's more centered on an idea. I've given programs around themes, so it varies.
Do you believe that a fair amount of this music will eventually make its way into the classical musical repertoire of other orchestras, of symphonies?
Well, my purpose is, of course, to help bring that about. I am a person who is, at this point in life and looking at the world, unwilling to make a prediction about anything.
It says in the Hebrew Bible, "Lo navi velo ben navi." I'm not the prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. And the guy who said that was Isaiah, who was a prophet. So you're in good company.
He knew what he was talking about.
He did indeed. In this era, as you mentioned, of challenge for the arts, for, of course, everybody, it's been a difficult financial climate for 6 or 7 years now. How can people help? Where can they go to find out more about the Recovered Voices Project and about your work?
The best way for people to learn more about, familiarize themselves with this music, would be to go to the website that I have created, called www.orelfoundation.org.
O-R-E-L.org.
That's right. And I believe that's a Hebrew word, and you would know that better than I would.
Correct.
I was inspired to start this website full of information by repeatedly being questioned after concerts that I had given, where can I learn more about this? Audience members, musicians, and there was no place to send them. So I decided that this website should be a source of information first and foremost. So we have about 24 composers whom we have chosen, and we can and we will expand that at some point. And we write there. You can read their biography. You can see all the works that they have written. We have essays by musicologists who are conversant in this period and this music. There's a lot of interesting reading material, pictures, and also we try to keep the public updated as to any activities that are known to us where the music is being performed, and that can be anywhere from Los Angeles to New York, to Berlin, to Sydney, Australia. Anything we know about, we put up there. Well, so that people know how to find it.
I want to thank Maestro James Conlon for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Again, orel.org, the Orel Foundation, which explores recovered voices. Mazel tov on winning the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. I hope it's a helpful and useful award for you, and you continue to do your great work recovering these lost voices.
I thank you, Rabbi, for this great, great honor that you have given me.
Our pleasure. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Two Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Rabbi Gershon Sizomu, the chief rabbi of Uganda and the first sub-Saharan black African to be ordained a rabbi in an American seminary. He is the rabbi of the Abu Yudaya people, a delightful and fascinating guest talking about a really interesting community. Don't miss him. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Hanukkah preview of music for the Great Festival of Lights, which begins November 26th, the night before Thanksgiving. This one's from Matisyahu, the Jewish reggae hip-hop star. It's called, appropriately enough, Happy Hanukkah. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Is the night, sunset, twilight, head back, come along, take flight. I am twinkle and a shooting in the sky, dime shine and I'm feeling alright. But I can't afford the one you love. Peace and light from below to above. 8 nights, celebrate till I fly in the sky like a dove. Let me unwind as I light up a flame in the name of the Lion of Judah. Drop like a hammer when I fall like the rain. Sun shower, feel a blabber when I hit like a train. With the divine, it's a battle to your spine. It's a battle from the ancient line. Son of King David, Maccabee till the end of time. You're my light in this hardest time. Yes, you bring peace to my mind. Won't you please let me unwind as I light up a flame in the name of the Lion of Judah. Drop like a
Katrine. Happy Hanukkah, I wanna give a gift to you. Light up the night, my love, shine through. From Mount Zion, this is what we do. Bring love to you. Happy Hanukkah, I wanna give a gift to you. Light up the night, my love, shine through. From Mount Zion, this is what we do. Bring love to you. Celebration, get your hands up now. Get your hands up now. Celebration, get your hands up now. Get your hands up now. Celebration, to you. Light up the night, my love, shine through. From Mount Zion, this is what we do. Bring love to you. Happy Hanukkah.